Good evening. Good evening. Hello, and welcome to Take 127 Overlooked on Ship Full of Bums, Thames Delta Independent Radio, www.sfob.co.uk. We are coming to you tonight live.
Live.
If you can believe that, live. If you can believe it. Live from the top of the Railway Hotel in sunny Southend-on-Sea. What a pleasure it must be for you listeners to hear our voices yet again. Okay, introductions. My name is Dan. I shall be your host. Over there, the man in charge of the music and in charge of the deep thought and insights. It is.
Mr. Deep Thought. Thank you, Dan. That's,
Yes, we all
I like that.
Well, by the way, I've only just noticed you're thought. Quite tanned, aren't you? Have you been in
Very
the garden?
Tanned.
I've been working hard.
Have you?
I have indeed.
Moving on.
Swiftly.
Yes, next to Mike, Mr. Music, we have...
Kirk. Hello.
Hello.
All right, back from Holes as well, sort
yes.
of.
Yes, yeah, you've been away. Anywhere nice?
Reading.
Oh, so no then.
Reading, drinking beer and cycling.
So, well, it'll do. It'll do.
Drinking beer while cycling. Yeah.
Kind of.
All right.
Drinking beer while cycling and eating cheese.
Yes, lots of cheese. Yes. Yeah.
Cheese.
Yes. And bread products as well.
Oh.
Excellent. Marvellous. It's a simpler way of life in Reading, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very simple, yeah. They haven't discovered the internet there.
No. So, and last but by no means least, the man that makes the magic happen. It is our engineer.
Thank you, Daniel. Too kind. Good evening, everybody. Hope you enjoy the show.
Yes, that was Ian. Ian, our engineer. Well. Take 127 Overlooked. There were one or two technical difficulties with the previous show. For some reason, the computer decided to stop broadcasting it. So you
Don't
probably
trust
wouldn't.
Robots.
Absolutely not. No, that's the new Ship Full of Bums AI that's recently been installed. Not really working out as planned. So unfortunately, that will only be available as a download. So you can check that out on sfob.co.uk. But here we are, live. Let's talk about some movies. Mm. Shall I tell the listeners at home what the theme is, chaps?
Go on, then.
Yeah, okay. Why not?
Why not? The theme is musicals. That's musicals. I'm going to come over to you, Mike. Perhaps you would like to tell us about the first movie we will be discussing tonight.
Okay, then. The first film... It's a film called Sweet Charity, which you may or may not have heard of. It's probably not as overlooked as many of our overlooked movies. However, it is overlooked critically and certainly overlooked financially. It absolutely tanked at the box office, nearly brought down Universal Studios. Anyway, a little bit of a précis, if you will. It's Sweet Charity, the subtitle is The Adventures of a Girl Who Wanted to Be Loved. And that pretty much tells the story. That's kind of, you know, says it all on the tin sort of thing. It is. And that's exactly what it is. 1969, don't know if I said that, directed by Bob Fosse. Music by Cy Coleman, Dorothy Fields. It stars Shirley MacLaine as a taxi dancer. That's a dancer in a sleazy nightclub, Times Square nightclub, who does one-to-one dancing with people who pay 50 cents or whatever to have a dance with her. So it's a really sleazy type of existence. And her name is Charity Hope Valentine in the film, which is a little bit on the nose as a kind of character name. But I'll pass that one by. Anyway, when we first see her, she's like very... optimistic and very happy, and she's happy in love. Within the first 10 minutes or so of the movie, her boyfriend stole all her money and run away. Then with her girlfriends, she's sort of basically she's the proverbial good time had by all. She's got very poor choice of men and wants to get out of her life. So off of that first thing with her boyfriend, there's an incident where she meets an Italian movie star, and there's a few humorous moments and a few really good musical moments. But that's a little kind of interlude, if you like. The bulk of the film is the third guy that comes into a life, a guy called Oscar, who's an sort of a timid, shy insurance accountant, or insurance, something to do with insurance, office bot, anyway, bit of a geek. And really, it's will they, won't they? Because she has to hide, or feels she has to hide her lifestyle. And will they, won't they get it together? So the bulk of the movie is about them. And that's basically the plot. Interspersed with the plot is some terrific musical numbers. Yeah. Absolutely outstanding musical numbers. Mm. And stuff that, if you've not seen the movie, you probably would not believe some of the music came from this film, like Big Spender, that Shirley Bassey made her own, came from this movie.
Yeah.
It kind of blew me away to know that. It's like, oh, that's a movie. There's another, if I find my page on my notes, I'll give you some other musical numbers. You think, oh, really? I thought that was something else. It's no, it's this film. It's terrific. So the musical set pieces, I think, are terrific. I personally think it's a really good movie. Oh, I didn't mention this. It's I told you about the music, who wrote the music. It's based on the stage version of the same name, which in turn was based on the Fellini film. Mm. You don't get too many musicals based on Fellini films, not really, do you?
No.
I can think of like this one, basically.
And it was, sorry, the Fellini one.
That was a sex worker.
She was actually a prostitute. Yeah. So this is kind of a slightly softened American version where she's not actually a prostitute, but it's kind of hinted at that she effectively gives gentlemen her time for money.
Well, and hey, Big Spender, he's, you know, it's all about that, giving your body away to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, we've all been there.
Oh, well, yeah.
We've all done
it. You don't get too many high bids, though, do you, then?
Well, you might be surprised.
Oh, I would be surprised. Anyway, so that's basically your premise. I really like this film. I'm just stunned that when they have, like, every bank holiday, top 50 musicals ever made type thing on Channel 4, this is hardly ever mentioned. And if it is, it's way down, you know, number 47 or something. People just don't give it the time of day, this movie. I think it's absolutely terrific. It's one of my... It's not the best musical ever made. I think not sound music. Watch my mouth out. Singing in the Rain. I think that's just unimpeachable as far as the musical goes. I would say this gives it a good run for its money.
Mm.
I think Shirley MacLaine is outstanding in this film.
Yes.
Outstanding.
True.
Mm. Anyway, I've talked too long, I feel.
You know what? You've spoken about the music. Would this be a good opportunity to have a little bit of a song?
Oh, from it? Okay. Yeah.
And then
that's
we
a good
could
idea.
Come to Kirk and see what Kirk thinks.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, can I just lead into the first one, which, again, I've lost my notes. No. Somebody might have to help me here. The peril's doing it live. Oh, I found it. This song, it's, again, I was saying, like, you probably know this song. You just don't know it's from this movie.
Mm.
It's there's got to be something better than this.
Mm.
And it's very West Side Story feel to it.
Yeah.
It almost goes into like America. You know, the song America now and again. Is Cheetah Rivera, Paula Kelly and Shirley MacLaine. And they're the three sort of taxi dancers in the movie. And they're on the top of a kind of tenement building, like West Side Story, saying there's got to be something better than this.
Mm.
Well, take it away, Ian.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm not going to spend the next 40 years of my life in the Fandango Ballroom. I am not going to become the world's first little old gray-haired taxi dancer. I am getting out.
Out? What a nice word.
There's got to be something better than this. There's gotta be something better to do. And when I find me something better to do, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get out, I'm gonna get up, get out and do it.
There's gotta be some respectable trade. There's gotta be something easy to learn. And when I find me something I ever can learn, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get out, I'm gonna get out and learn it. All these jokers, how I hate them, with their groping, grabbing, clutching, clenching, strangling, handling, fumbling, pinching. Fooey! There's gotta be some life cleaner than this. There's gotta be some good reason to live. And when I find me some kind of life I can live, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get out, I'm gonna get up and live it!
I got it. I have got it.
What?
I am gonna be a receptionist in one of those glass skyscrapers, 9 to 5, my own typewriter, and water coolers, and office parties, ooh, and coffee breaks, wow.
When I sit at my desk on the 41st floor in my copy of a copy of a copy of Dior, I'll receive big tycoons and I'll point to a chair. I'll say, honey, while you're waiting, how would you like to put it down over there? There's gotta be something better than this. There's gotta be something better to do. And when I find me something better to do, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get up and do it!
Hey, hey, me too, me too. I'm gonna get out of here and I'm gonna go right to the top. I am gonna be a hat check girl at one of them East Side high class restaurants. Yeah. You know, a tray full of cigarettes costing 60 cents a pack and keep the change. And all those hats coming in. Yeah. Derbies, yeah. Homburgs. Ooh, and that cute little checkered number with the skinny brim and the feather.
Check your hat, sir. Check your coat, sir. Check your vest, sir. Check your pants. Check your socks, sir. Check your shoes, sir. I can hold them while you dance. Check your eyes, sir. Check your ears, sir. Check and see if you are free. How about it? After hours, I'll check you and you check me.
Me too, me too. I'm gonna get out too.
But baby, what can you do?
I don't know. I'll just get me out of here and I'll figure it out later.
There's gotta be some life cleaner than this. There's gotta be some good reason to live. And when I find me some kind of life I can live,
I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna get up, live it!
Wow.
Wow.
Fantastic. Mike.
Oh, yeah, I just think that song is absolutely wonderful. It contains one of my favourite lines of any song ever. I mean, the girls are talking about how they want to get out, and their peak of what they want to do. One wants to be a receptionist, and one a hat check girl. So that kind of shows how low they are. Mm. That is the ultimate of where they can get to. Mm. And the one singing about a receptionist, she's singing as in a loving way. I sit at my desk on the 41st floor in a copy of a copy of a copy of Dior. Oh, what a stunning lyric that is. That is just such, it tells you everything about. Mm. That's what I think this musical does extremely well. The songs tell the story as well. Mm. They're not just, well, some songs are just chucked in there for light relief or whatever. Mm. But other songs, like that one in particular, moves the story forward. It moves the plot forward. I think it's terrifically done. Anyway, yeah. Kirk, I think you want to say something.
I was just going to go back to mentioning Federico Fellini's Nights at Cabrera, which this film is based on, and very, very similar films, as in the storyline, with a couple of noticeable differences. The ending is slightly different, but everything else is very similar, including meeting the Italian star and and all those scenes, and then meeting the Oscar character as well. He's actually called Oscar in Knights of Cabrera as well. Mm. So it's quite interesting because I actually watched that at the same time, or very near the same time, just to do a bit of a comparison. But yeah, it's a very interesting film, Sweet Charity. Particularly the bit with Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah, I love it.
Which I seem to recall the character Oscar says, "Oh, we're going to go to church."
Yeah,
and you kind of think, "Oh, they're going to go to church," but it isn't at all what you expect. But in Fellini's version, they do actually go to church, so that hence why that reference is in there. So I kind of thought that was interesting. Yeah. It was very much of its time, very much 69 when it was definitely. Made.
It's a bit fab and groovy, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a bit Austin Powers at times.
At times, yeah. I mean, there's a brilliant dance routine quite early into the film, just before she meets the Italian actor. And I've forgotten the name of the dance, but it's a very... If you might have seen the clip before... And it's a very 60s, as you say, Austin Powers kind of routine.
It's very staccato movements, yes. Isn't it? Like, kind of robotic almost.
Yeah, I mean, it's epic, actually. It's a routine. It's phenomenal how they actually choreographed that. And it's just a joy to watch, actually.
But the whole sequence, that particular sequence, I agree, is fantastic. Although, I'm not sure about Bob Fosse being such a great choreographer, because it does look... Well, I suppose at the time it was innovative. Yeah. Now it looks a bit cliched, but he invented the cliche. Yeah. I mean, it's because of him. Yeah. It's now cliche, so I've got to give it a bit of a
Austin
slack
Powers
on that.
Parodied it, really. You know.
But they go to a club. Shirley MacLaine's character and this Italian movie star she bumps into go to a club. And they sit down and watch a dance act. And for like next 10 minutes, the plot is on hold while we watch them dance. And... I think that's great.
Yeah.
And there's no pretense. It's just that the plot stops while they watch the show. Same with the Sammy Davis Jr., which we're going to have to buy a burst of that at some stage.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, definitely.
Because that is just outstanding. And again, you'll recognise the song as soon as you hear it. You think, really? Is it from that movie? You just...
I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers away for this film. I mean, I know, again, it's an old film. Possibly lots of people have seen it. But it's really important to note the opening scene where it's set in Central Park in New York and they're on the bridge and she gets knocked into the pond or the river or whatever it is underneath the bridge. That particular scene sort of, you know, has an interesting plot point later on in the film, and it's kind of important to note the relevance of that scene as well, I feel.
Well, it's funny actually, because there's two endings.
Yeah.
There's a theatrical ending, which is I'm not going to give spoilers, but it's not a traditional happy ending. However, it is an optimistic ending.
Yes,
But so there you go. But there's an alternative ending they shot, which looks like they spent a lot more money on the alternative ending, and it has a callback to that first bit with the bridge.
Yes,
and it makes a lot more sense now. And what I don't quite understand, it's like, why didn't they use that other ending? Apparently, Bob Fosse shot it because he thought the studio won't let me use the original ending from the stage play. They want something happier than that. So he shot this new ending, and the studio pretty much said, "No, you're fine as you are." It's like, well, that's...
Yeah,
that's
unusual in filmmaking history.
And probably a bad mistake, I would say.
Well, I don't know. I liked the fact that you don't get a traditional happy ending, but it's not a sad ending. It is, as you said, a very optimistic one.
Yeah, it is.
And the ending took me by surprise. I just kind of went, really?
Yeah.
Well, they're finishing it that way. Kind of made perfect sense.
Yeah, likewise to me. I just thought it took me by surprise because I thought I wasn't keeping an eye on the length of the film as it was playing in my player, so I didn't know where the ending was going to come in. And then when it sort of ended, I was like, oh crumbs, you know. It really, like yourself, it took me by surprise. But also, an extra on the disc that I got actually has the alternative ending.
Yeah, mine too. So yeah,
I actually watched that as well, just to see what had taken place in that ending. And, yeah, I'm glad that the studio went with Bob Fosse, you know, with his decision, and kept with the original script that he'd written for the stage play. So, and interestingly, Knights of Cabrera has got a different ending as well. It's slightly different. I don't know if I can reveal that one, but maybe the viewers will watch, go out and watch a bit of Fellini, you know. But yeah,
we can back home.
Yeah. but yeah, that's got a very slightly different ending again. So, but I won't go into description about that. So,
in terms of this movie, then, you guys both seem to have really quite enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I love this movie. It's not, I don't think it's a great movie, but I love it.
I got quite moved by it, actually. Surprised me. It really did surprise me. I mean, not like yourselves, I wouldn't say it was a great film, but I would say it's definitely a film worth seeing. You know, if you're going to say films to see before you die, maybe it should be one you should see, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. A bucket list one, maybe.
Yeah.
You know.
Anyway, Dan, what do you think? You keep your powder dry on this, aren't you?
I'll be perfectly honest. I was a little cool towards this movie. There are some fantastic songs in it. There are some fantastic set pieces. I had a little bit of difficulty caring that much about the characters. And it all, for me, it felt a little bit disjointed that there were lots of little set pieces going on and you weren't quite sure where it was going next. And so, I mean, you know, the whole business with Ricardo Montalban as, who was it? Is it something like Vittorio Vincenzi or something?
Yeah.
That, great scenes, that was really fantastic. And then that's it, you don't see him again. Assumed he was going to be the main love interest all the way through it. So you effectively spend 20, 25 minutes.
It's the same in Knights of Cabrera as well. Yeah.
And then it moves on.
Because you get an actor in that as well, and then it just goes on to the Oscar scene as well.
Yeah.
So it just moves on. Yeah. So it is very much paralleled with that.
Yeah, I found that a little odd. It did feel a little sort of fractured.
The way I interpreted it was really it was more of a fantasy thing. Like, even though it happened in reality in the film, it was kind of like, oh, you know, a Hollywood or Italian famous film star, you know, I could be in love with someone like this, but it's never going to happen. Our paths are in different directions completely. But it's wonderful to spend 24 hours in the company of this actor, you know.
And another massive song, If They Could See Me Now. Yeah. Now, everybody's heard that song.
Yeah, it's in that scene,
I didn't bring it to play for this show, but because you know it.
It's
from this movie. Shirley MacLaine is basically saying to, or pretending she's talking to her friends about, if she could see me with this Italian actor who's bought me dinner and now I'm in his bedroom. And there's a like comic sequence. But you're right, it's like just dropped it. The film could exist quite happily without that 20 minutes.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then there would be no need to have an intermission in the middle of the film. Bizarrely, over the last 3 or 4 days, I've watched 2 films that quite by chance both had intermissions in them. One of them was this, and the other one was Jeremiah Johnson.
Oh, okay.
The Sidney Pollack, Robert Redford thing. And I was just one of those life's little coincidences. I cannot remember the last time I watched a movie and it came up halfway through with intermission and played some music twice in 4 days.
Yeah.
Which I just thought...
Do you know, when I saw that, I did smile. And then I thought, like, I'm surprised Tarantino has done that in a movie as a kind of, you know...
Postmodern thing.
Postmodern nod.
Has he not?
I don't think he has.
No. Might be something in Grindhouse, the 2 films. Certainly not in one of his regular films.
No. Because they split a whole scene, don't they? There's a scene where, without giving it away, a lift is stuck containing some main characters. And then it cuts to an intermission.
To be continued.
Yeah.
And then there's an intermission.
Fantastic. I mean, that was just normal filmmaking back in the day, I guess. Yeah. Now it looks postmodern. It's really...
I wouldn't mind, but the whole film is only about, what, 2.25 hours long?
2:20, I think. 2:20,
yeah. I mean, now, if you go and see a film that's 2 hours 20, that's pretty much the norm, isn't it?
Yeah.
And nary an intermission to be seen.
But then 2001 had an intermission as well.
Well, yes.
And that's 2 hours, just over 2 hours,
oh, really?
Isn't it?
No, no, longer.
Yeah, but that was because it was... That's because it was quite boring, and that was an opportunity for the cinema staff to go around and shake the patrons awake.
He's going to swing from first.
So, speaking of intermissions, would this be a good opportunity to have a listen to that Sammy Davis Jr. track that you were telling us about?
Should we give the title away or just play it?
You'll know it. You choose. I can't decide. It's too exciting.
Okay. Sammy Davis Jr. And he's only in for this one,
eight-minute
scene or something. Mm. That's all he does. He's not a character. He doesn't appear before or after.
Well, he's got a name, though. He's Big Daddy Brubeck.
Yeah. I mean, he's always got to play a character called Big Daddy. Oh, of course, it's contractual. I actually think Sammy Davis Jr. was a genius as song and dance man. I don't think he was peerless.
Great voice and great dancer,
Anyway, this is Rhythm of Life.
Daddy started out in San Francisco, tooting on his trumpet loud and mean.
Suddenly a voice said, go for it, Daddy, spread the picture on a wider screen.
And the voice said, Daddy, there's a million pigeons waiting to be hooked on new religions. Hit the road, Daddy, leave your common law wife, spread the religion of the rhythm of life. And the rhythm of life is a powerful beat, puts a tingle in your fingers and a tingle in your feet. Rhythm in your bedroom, rhythm in the street. Yes, the rhythm of life is a powerful beat.
To feel the rhythm of life, to feel the powerful beat, to feel the tingle in your fingers, to feel the tingle in your feet.
Daddy, go, 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 beat. To feel the tingle in your fingers, to feel the tingle in your feet.
Daddy spread the gospel in Milwaukee, took his walkie-talkie to Rocky Ridge.
Blew his way to Canton, then to Scranton, till he landed under the Manhattan Bridge.
Daddy was a new sensation, got himself a congregation, built up quite an operation down below.
With a pie piper blowing while the muscatel was flowing, all the cats were go-go-going
down below.
Daddy was a new sensation, built up quite an congregation, with a pie piper then operation down.
Flip your wings and fly to Daddy. Flip your wings and fly to Daddy. Flip your wings and fly to Daddy. Fly, fly, fly to Daddy. Take a dive and swim to Daddy. Take a dive and swim to Daddy. Take a dive and swim to Daddy.
Swim, swim, swim to Daddy.
Hit the floor and crawl to Daddy. Hit the floor and crawl to Daddy. Hit the floor and crawl to Daddy.
Flip your wings,
fly.
Flip your wings,
fly.
Flip, fly.
Flip, fly.
Flip,
fly.
Flip, fly.
Flip, fly. Flip, fly. Flip, fly. Flip, fly.
Take a dive. Take a dive.
Swim.
Take a dive.
Swim.
Swim.
Yeah.
Swim.
Swim.
Daddy.
Yeah.
Daddy.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, Daddy.
Hit the floor.
Call to Daddy.
Hit the floor.
Call to Daddy.
Hit the floor.
Call to Daddy.
Hit the floor and crawl to Daddy.
Ah! Call to Daddy. Call to Daddy. Call, crawl, crawl to Daddy.
Oh,
And the rhythm of life is a powerful beat. Puts a tingle in your fingers and a tingle in your feet. Rhythm in your bedroom, rhythm in the street. Yes, the rhythm of life is a powerful beat. To feel the rhythm of life. To your daddy, take a dive and swim to your daddy.
It's a far and cross to your daddy.
Lord. Seriously, listeners, we were all rocking out to that.
Yeah, we're doing a whole mad dance routine ourselves.
What a track.
That's fantastic.
Awesome.
And it is a fantastic scene in the film as well. Very well choreographed, but I didn't think that much about it. Seriously, it's one of those. Go on. Okay, this would be my advice. Go on YouTube and watch all of the song and dance sequences. Don't bother with the rest of the film. It's a yawn fest. Obviously, the chaps disagree because you both really liked it.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
So I think that's definitely a...
it's a hit
one
for me.
Check out. So. Wonderful. Good. Okay, so let's move on now to our next movie. And to do that, I'm going to hand over to the one, the only, it's Kirk.
Well, thank you there. Right. Okay, Dan. I'm just going to do a little segue, actually, into the last film, Sweet Charity, and the film we're going to talk about now. Just to mention that Bob Fosse's second film, which was Cabaret, pipped this particular director's film to the Oscars in 1972.
Did it, Kirk? How did you know that, Kirk? Was it the messenger?
Well, it's a little factoid. So,
wow. Honestly, Kirk, this is why we've got you on the show, because you managed to dig out these gems.
Yeah.
The things you research and messenger.
I wish Mike would up his game a little bit.
And that was my factoid, listener.
Well, I just plagiarised it off you, so there you go. And the director was Francis Ford Coppola with The Godfather, the first Godfather, 1972. Which brings us on to the film that we're going to talk about now, which is Francis Ford Coppola's One from the Heart, made in 1982. So, for those that don't know, I'll give a little bit of a synopsis on this film. It's basically set in on the 4th of July in Las Vegas. And there's Hank, who's a mechanic, and Franny, a travel agent, who break up while celebrating their 5th anniversary. Hank has been neglecting Franny's needs for travel and adventure and excitement, so they both break from each other for the night and meet what they think is their dream lovers. Hank meets Leah, a circus girl, and Franny meets Ray, a musician and a waiter. After their fantasy nights, Hank feels remorseful and tries to win back Franny's heart, but Franny needs more convincing to win back Hank's heart, sorry. So that's the basic plot. And basically the cast is Frederick Forrest as Hank and Terry Garr as Franny. And we've got Raul Julia as Ray, the waiter stroke musician. And Natasha Kinski as Leah, the circus girl. And also we've got a small part from Harry Dean Stanton as Mo, who's a friend of Hank. And it's even though we've linked these together as musicals, strictly speaking, it's not quite the normal musical that you'd expect, in that the main protagonists don't actually break out into song. What we actually have is a soundtrack by Tom Waits and songs written by Tom Waits, whereby he is actually performing the role of an onlooker onto their scenes, looking
almost
above.
Almost like a narrator.
Yeah, along with Crystal Gale as well. So they're both almost like playing the roles of the two protagonists as well. I did read somewhere that the idea was that the opening scene of the film, where it pans into Las Vegas and it's kind of very deliberately a matte painting from above, it's supposed to be based on the Greek gods Zeus and Hera. Yeah. Mm. So it's sort of loosely based on that Greek mythological story. Albeit it's based in Las Vegas and in, at the time, present time. Mm. So that's basically the story of the film. There were lots of troubles on the way, which we probably explore a little bit later down the line. But it was Coppola's first film after Apocalypse Now. So it's very much a different kind of film compared to his last film. And that was kind of a deliberate move on his part. He wanted to make something a little bit more magical and a little bit more Hollywood, if you like, to contrast his experiences from making Apocalypse Now.
I think it's certainly interesting. You could put forward the opinion that Apocalypse Now was Coppola's last great film, and that this was the beginning of the end.
Ooh.
This was a spiral downwards into mediocrity.
No.
You could put that view forwards, couldn't you?
No, I couldn't. No, I couldn't.
Well, I know that after this he did Rumblefish and The Outsiders, and I know that you like...
I'm very fond of both those films.
And also he did have a little blip with Bram Stoker's Dracula, where he actually directed something good. But you could...
But he lost so much money, didn't he? It's his own Zoetrope, how you spell it, that's it, studios. It sunk the studios.
Yeah.
And he made a lot of film, like a filmmaker for hire afterwards, just to pay some of the debts back. Like Sweet Charity, going back to that for a second, cost about $20 million, made about $8 million, so it tanked. But compared to this, it cost, I don't know, $40-50 million, made like tuppence, ain't he? It just did not work.
Didn't make
at
any.
All.
Actually, there was an interesting thing, I think, in Roger Ebert's review of this, because Coppola had, what was it called? Was it The Silverfish?
Yeah.
Which was basically the trailer that he had on set that had a little kitchenette in it and an espresso machine and TV screens, so he could sit in it and he could watch on the TV screen what was being filmed outside. And I think, and he had all this video technology and all these things. It was a real kind of technological leap forward. And in Roger Ebert's review, he said that Coppola took an $8 million, a movie that should have cost $8 million, and by introducing all this cutting edge technology, managed to bring it in for only $23 million. I think that seems to have been the view, that it was a slight misstep in that respect.
I think it's important to put it in some context as well, because the Zoetrope Studios was a kind of a Hollywood experiment, if you like, because the idea was that he was going to make lots of films from this studio, and yes, you're right. I mean, the prices added up. It should have been an $8 million film, but it cost 23. But the idea was that everything would have been in place for all the actors, all the studios, all the sets. Everything was there in place. So if the experiment had worked, who knows, we would have had a lot more cheaper films, because this was breaking boundaries down. I mean, as you mentioned, there was video technology used live while they were making scenes rather than sort of breaking.
They had video assists, which now every movie has video assists, so they basically can see what it looks like instantly. And this they invented the technology to do it on this film. So it was groundbreaking in many ways, but unfortunately it's not a very good film.
No.
And he was working. He directed so many movies for pretty much the next decade or two that were purely to pay off his debts incurred as a result of this.
I could have swore I said something like that.
Did you? Oh, okay. Sorry, I just wanted to make it clearer for the listeners.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So if I tuned out and was bored by you, then can you imagine what they're going through? Mike, what were your thoughts then on this? It sounds like you weren't massively keen.
I think it looks beautiful, looks stunning. And that's where it finishes, really. As far as I think it's an epic failure. I think it's worth watching. I actually think it's not calling it a bad movie is like just diminishing just what epic failure it is, I think, artistically. It looks stunning, but I just think the story sucks. It's really such a bad story. Structure-wise, the plot, it just stinks, plays up. It's awful. It's a love story about two people who don't love each other, and at the start, they live in together and then break up quite soon. You don't like either of them. They both cheat on each other, and the whole movie is, will they, won't they get back together? And who gives the monkeys? Because you hate both of them.
Yeah, and if they do get back together, how long until they split up again?
Yeah, because there's no real...
there's no spark, is there, between them?
And Frederick Forrest, he's a pretty decent actor. Mm. In this, I think he's totally miscast. There's no chemistry between any of the characters at all. In my opinion, I can see I'm going to move slightly away from Burger. He's within hitting distance.
Well, I'm going to disagree. This is the first, isn't it? And I think it was very brave of Coppola to actually cast Forrest and Terry Garr in those roles. Because neither of them had starred in any films previous to this film, ever. They'd always been lower down the list of sort of, you know, entries in films. So I thought it was a very brave move to put those two people forward as the main actors.
Terry Garr was a pretty major player in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I still wouldn't say she was way up the top there, though. You know, if you put all the scenes together in Close Encounters, it's probably about 20 minutes. You know, so this is definitely her. This is her film. If you were going to say a Terry Garr film where she shone, this is it, you know.
You've got to think for Terry Garr, haven't you?
not necessarily.
yes.
You'd like to feed her cheese and breads and top quality beers. From a shoe.
Yeah. But no, I just thought it was a brave move. And the context of the film is it's only a small passage of time. It's only 24 hours or so. You know, that's what we're...
And it feels like it while you're watching it.
Nice.
So, you know, the film, there's only so much you can do. Okay, the film's roughly an hour and 40 minutes. But, you know, to portray 24 hours, there's only so much you can do with those characters and those actors in that time. And I think quite a lot actually happens and quite a lot moves on. And the two characters learn a lot about each other.
Yes. Oh, I would disagree there. But I think rather than me and Kurt argue, shall we put a bit of music on?
I'd just like to comment about the music. I mean, even though the film was panned at the time by the critics, a lot of people have gone back to this film and they've kind of retrospectively looked at it and thought it was quite a masterpiece that was overlooked. On top of that, I think the thing that has survived whatever happened to this film is the soundtrack. The soundtrack is just utterly gorgeous. I mean, it's one of the best things Tom Waits has ever done. It's just such a beautiful soundtrack.
I would disagree with that, but that's because I have my personal preferences. Anybody out there who's a Tom Waits fan, do please listen to The Black Rider, which is superb. superb album.
Or
much
Swordfish
better music
trombones.
Yeah. Oh, yes. In fact, almost everything that Tom Waits has done is better.
Than what?
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Should we have that?
It's an utterly, I think it's an utterly beautiful soundtrack, and it'll melt your heart. It just melt your heart.
Basically. Here we go then. What's this one, Mike?
Oh. This is the title track.
This is One from the Heart?
This is One from the Heart.
This one is from the heart.
This one's from the heart.
Yes.
As you go out and knock the horn, it's Independence Day. But instead I just pour myself a dream. It's got to be love, I've never felt this way.
This one's Mike. From the heart. Mike,
yes.
Would you like to talk to us about the music?
Mm. Well, I agree with Kirk. It's fantastic music.
Mm.
However, I think it's all wrong for musical because it's all downbeat and moody. It's a great album to listen to, and I have listened to it. It's kind of... as a lot of Tom Waits stuff is, it's 3 a.m. smoky, kind of bluesy, slow, melancholic music. And that is okay. But I think a musical, you've got to have some upbeat numbers. Like, compared to the two songs we played from Sweet Charity, which we were dancing around the room, at least for the second one, that is probably as upbeat as music gets in the film. Yeah. And I just don't think it works as a musical. It's a non-traditional musical. I get that. And so I think Coppola is to be congratulated on such an epic failure because having a failure, I think it means you've risked failure. And so he's not gone an easy route. He made superb Godfather 1 and 2, The Conversation, which is a stunning film.
Yeah,
Apocalypse Now, which I don't rate as highly as some people, mm-hmm. but stunning. Then he made this movie totally on a studio set, which he then he built, mm-hmm. or his company built it. It's his total movie. And in my opinion, it's only an opinion, I think it's an artistic failure. But I think that's good. To having a failure shows you are willing to push to go out there. I think there's nothing wrong in failing. Failing is good.
Why do we fall down, Master Bruce? So we can learn to pick ourselves up again. And maybe he might do one day. Poor old Coppola.
You're Kirk. Going all Batman on me, then, weren't you?
Yes. Did you know there's a link between Batman and this movie?
No, really?
Yeah, and that link is that I just mentioned both of them in the same sentence. There is no further link. Maybe the listeners out there might know a link between this film and Batman. Kirk, let's come back to you because I can see the anger flashing in your eyes. Everything that Mike and I are saying, our kind of colossal indifference to this film.
Yeah.
It just seems to be making you more and more irate.
Sorry, Kirk. Can I just interject and then let you have the floor? Please.
Yeah, shut up, Kirk. You're taking over.
On the music, just one final note on the music. You can't come out of that movie humming any tunes. Because it's all... You can't hum it.
What's that noise?
I thought Ian had accidentally pressed the button and started playing it again for a second.
Honestly, it's stunning, isn't it? My Tom Waits impression is almost as good as my the Vavitch impression. So. But no, you can't hum any tunes.
So, okay.
So, therefore, it's not a musical.
Not a musical.
If so, facto,
could I say
QED.
Something?
Yes.
Right.
Mike, go. Be quiet for
a moment. First of all, this isn't a traditional musical. So this is a sleazy downtown, like through the night Las Vegas film, and it's the music is all the midnight hour. It's bluesy, it's jazzy, you know. It has that feel for the film. It's not a traditional musical, so why would you come out of the cinema humming a song, you know, in a jolly fashion when it's not that kind of a film? So this is kind of like a fantasy film. because it's semi hyper real. The whole of downtown Las Vegas is built on the studio set, and you know things like dance floors light up and things like that in the middle of the Las Vegas Strip. You know, so it's kind of like a semi fantasy look about the whole film. The whole scene with Natasha Nakinsky, where she's doing a circus routine on a high wire and stuff, is all very hyper real as well. It's not a musical in the traditional Hollywood sense. So Coppola was experimenting with a different style altogether, and you know I think you know that should be celebrated. You know, you sort of hinted along the lines of like, well, yeah, it was an epic failure, but actually I think he was doing something very interesting with this film and the whole look of it, and it was very sensual and very beautiful in many ways. I feel quite passionate about this film and the look and the sound and everything about this film. I personally find it really moves me in certain ways. So, yeah.
Okay, no, that's fair. I mean, I think, and obviously I'm going to make a bit of a gag out of what I'm about to say, but undoubtedly, yes, there was a huge amount of work put into this in constructing the sets, the whole feel of it, some of the visuals where you've got two scenes playing out at the same time, you know, what she's doing and what he's doing, and visually that looks amazing. He achieved an awful lot. It's just a shame that he didn't put quite as much effort into the script, in my opinion, because it all falls a bit flat and the characters weren't particularly likeable or interesting or believable. And when the ending occurred, I didn't care. I really didn't care about it. So, yeah, it fails on the script level, I think, personally. So, have we got anything more to say about this?
I'm not allowed to say anymore.
Yes, go on, Mike. Of course, yes.
No,
please speak.
I don't want to now.
Okay, then.
Do you want to play some more upbeat music for a bit?
What is this, Mike?
What a twang.
Bicycles, wouldn't it?
Broken bicycles.
Marvellous.
You whistle this one along at home.
Broken bicycles, old busted chains, rusted handlebars out in the rain. Somebody must have an orphanage for all these things that nobody wants anymore. September's reminding July, it's time to be saying goodbye. Summer is gone, but our love will remain. Like old broken bicycles out in the rain.
Certainly going to be humming that one on the way home.
That kind of sums up my life. So, you know, that's how I will be going.
Broken bicycles. So, you know what? Yabba-dabba-do.
Yes,
you just said yabba-dabba-do.
Flintstones mode there. Heavens. Tom Waits does Flintstones. Yabba-dabba-do.
Heavens to Betsy.
I love the marvellous well.
Anyway, yes, sorry.
Philistines.
So, you know what? I think, personally, and this is my opinion, I think that when you've got a film that divides opinion as much as this one has, clearly it's got to be worth seeing. Yeah. So that you, dear, sweet, treasured listeners, can make up your own darn minds.
Dear Dan, I totally agree with what you. Every word you just said, I totally agree.
Thank you, Mike. I knew that you would. So, yeah, there we go. That's it. That's the musical show. Sweet Charity. Don't bother. Watch the songs on YouTube. One from the Heart. Don't bother at all. Kirk may disagree. And Mike as well. But, yeah, so there we go. That's those two. Have we got anything further to add, chaps? Or should we let the listeners go to bed and mull it over?
Availability. So
oh, yes, yeah.
They're not very available. Mm. I managed to pick up Sweet Charity on Blu-ray from Amazon France. That seems to be the only version available on Blu-ray in the world. Mm-hmm. And also One from the Heart, also only available from Amazon France. Mm. I'm not sure about availability on DVD.
Widely available, really. Well, you can get them on Amazon
but
for a few quid.
Both of these, well, the Sweet Charity's got the different cut of the ending on it, which is quite handy. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other little documentary pieces on there as well. And One for the Heart's got loads of supplements on there, all about Zoetrope Studios and all about what happened. And, you know, if you're interested in film history, definitely one to get hold of, even if you don't like the bloody film.
Yes, yes. which, to be fair, you probably won't, because it was awful, awful. No, it was an interesting watch, definitely worth looking at, even if for no other reason than it's an interesting piece of cinematic history.
Yeah, indeed.
So, Mike.
Yes.
I think we're all going to say goodbye. As the last track begins to play, could you tell us what the last track is, Mike? It's one of our signature things, isn't it?
It's a montage. Oh,
of the Sound of Music.
But not in. Oh, you ruined it, haven't you?
In any case, Ian's already playing it.
Oh, yeah, it is. There you go. Yeah.
16 seconds into
it.
Oh,
it's nearly finished. We better say goodbye then.
Okay, we'll say goodbye. I'll tell you what we'll do. Can we say goodbye and then can we wind it back to the beginning of the song and start it again? And we'll say our goodbyes. And we will probably see you next month unless we all get sacked from this thing that we do for no money.
What's the word that means our musical strung together bits in a montage type? There's a word.
Is there?
Not a
melody. Yeah, it is a melody, isn't it?
No,
it's not.
It's a montage. It's not montage.
Oh, no, it's not.
As
four old men sit in a room trying to think of a word for the next 15 minutes. What is it? Anyway, yeah, it's one of those things.
It's funnel bits of bits.
Overture.
No,
not reprise, is it?
No.
What is it?
Ian, you know about music.
Oh, you know what? I'm bored. I don't know about the listeners. Yeah. They've probably gone to bed. Who can blame them? Right, I think it's time that we said goodbye and then listen to the final piece of music. Mercifully, it's only 1 minute and 11 seconds long.
And it's a Sound of Music.
Sound of Music, 8-bit version. 8-bit version. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Should we go then?
Yeah.
Good. I'm going to go and get a drink.
Ooh,
bye then, folks.
Good
See
night.
You in a month.
Bye.
Bye. You know what? We're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to interrupt the outro music that we're playing because we remembered the word, everybody. We've remembered the word that we were desperately trying to think of. We've got a combined age of about 600 and we finally thought of the word. That word, of course, is a medley. Yeah. Bye then.